The following is an audio booklet from the United Church of God. To view this booklet and other resources online, please visit ucg.org.
The Final Superpower. The King of the North versus the King of the South. In Daniel chapter 10 and 11, there is another prophecy that has end-time implications. It's important because it reveals the political climate and tensions in the Middle East preceding both the first and second appearances of Jesus Christ as the Messiah. In both instances, Jerusalem is at the center of the political conflicts of the time. This is a prediction of political intrigue between two powers referred to as the King of the North and the King of the South. The names are references to their geographic location in relation to the land of Judah. Remember that Daniel was a prince from Jerusalem, and God's people of Israel are the center of prophecy. So the two powers historically came, and in the future, will come from regions of the globe that are to the north and south of Jerusalem. It doesn't necessarily mean from extremely southern or northern regions. Protracted political intrigue. The first 35 verses of Daniel chapter 11 give an account, written years in advance, of the intrigue between two political entities, the King of the South and the King of the North. In secular history, the King of the South is often referred to as Ptolemy. The Ptolemaic dynasty ruled from Alexandria in Egypt. The King of the North ruled from Antioch in Syria under the name Seleucus, or Antiochus. With this in mind, let's examine some of the details of the prophecy. You can find more information on the historical fulfillment of much of this prophecy in resources such as the Expositor's Bible Commentary, which we quote below, or other reliable reference works. Rather than our quoting the entire scriptural passage, we recommend that you read in your own Bible the cited verses, and remember that these details were foretold far in advance of their occurrence. Daniel chapter 11, verse 2. The three more kings are Cambyses, the elder son of Cyrus, Pseudo-Smerdis, an impostor who passed himself off as Cyrus's younger son, who had been secretly killed, and Darius the Persian. According to expositors, the Persian king who invaded Greece was Xerxes, who reigned 485 to 464 BC. Verses 3 through 4. Expositors expounds. Verse 3 introduces us to the rise of Alexander the Great. The language in verse 4 clearly suggests that this mighty conqueror was going to have a comparatively brief reign. In 7 or 8 years, he accomplished the most dazzling military conquest in human history. But he lived only 4 years more and died of a fever in 323. Alexander's kingdom was divided among four smaller and weaker empires. Alexander's infant son had been murdered in 310, and an illegitimate brother assassinated in 317. Thus, there were no descendants or blood relatives to succeed Alexander himself. So his kingdom was not divided among his posterity. Alexander's generals warred for control of his empire. The ensuing struggles for domination eliminated all but four, who became heads of the four divisions of his empire. This division into four was also foretold in the four-headed leopard of Daniel chapter 7, and the breaking of a male goat's large horn into four separate horns in Daniel chapter 8. The four successors were Cassander, reigning in Greece and the West, Lysimachus in Thrace and Asia Minor, Ptolemy in Egypt, and Seleucus in Syria. Of these four, two, Ptolemy and Seleucus, expanded their rule and territory. These were the kings of Egypt and Syria, respectively. The machinations that follow relate to these two. They are referred to as the King of the South, Ptolemy, and the King of the North, Seleucus, because of their location relative to Jerusalem. Verse 5. Expositors notes, the King of the South was to be Ptolemy the First. The biblical expression, one of his princes, refers to Seleucus. He had originally served under Ptolemy. In the intrigue after Alexander's death, Seleucus ultimately gained control over Syria and became king of the north. Seleucus eventually wielded more power than Ptolemy, controlling the greater part of what had been Alexander's empire. The dynasty of the Seleucid line was to continue until 64 BC. The Laodicean War. Verse 6. A state of tension and hostility existed between the king of the south and the king of the north. Ptolemy I died in 283 BC. In 252, the two powers attempted a treaty under which Berenice, the daughter of Ptolemy II, was to marry Antiochus II, the king of the north. Laodice, the first wife of Antiochus II, was repudiated. In 246 BC, Antiochus II was poisoned, widely assumed to be through the manipulations of Laodice. She claimed that Antiochus, on his deathbed, named her son heir. Berenice asked for help from Egypt to secure the throne for her own young son, but Laodice had them both assassinated. The prophecy, "She," that is, Berenice, "shall be given up," refers to the coup that Laodice engineered to effect the execution of Berenice, with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her in those times, refers to the deaths of others around Berenice. Berenice, her father Ptolemy II, and her husband, Antiochus II, were all removed from power by death in 246 BC. Some nobles who had supported Berenice as queen were also brought down. Verses 7 through 9. Retaliation followed. A series of military actions, which came to be known as the Laodicean War, resulted. Ptolemy II's son Ptolemy III sought to avenge his sister's death. He attacked the king of the north, now Laodice's son Seleucus II, and captured Seleucia, the port and fortress of the Syrian capital of Antioch. Verse 8 describes the recapture by Ptolemy of, according to expositors, long-lost idols and sacred treasures that had been stolen from Egypt by Cambyses in 526 BC. Peace was concluded between Ptolemy III and Seleucus II in 241 BC. Ptolemy III died in 221, outliving Seleucus II by nearly 6 years. Verses 10 through 12. The sons of Seleucus II attacked the king of the south after their father died. One of these sons, Seleucus III, reigned for only 3 years. His military activity was relatively minor. He died by poisoning. Another son, Antiochus III, the Great, did overwhelm and pass through. He advanced into the Holy Land, which Egypt had controlled. Ptolemy IV, the king of the south, retaliated and defeated the larger army of Seleucus III at the Battle of Raphia in 217 BC. After his victory, Ptolemy turned to a life of debauchery during which he slaughtered tens of thousands of Jews in Egypt. Through all this, he weakened his kingdom. Verses 13 through 16. The phrase, "at the end of some years," refers to an incident when, 15 years after his defeat, Antiochus III came against Ptolemy V, still a young boy. Ptolemy IV had died in 204. The Egyptian provinces were in turmoil because of the wretched life of Ptolemy IV. Many of the people, including Jews sympathetic to the king of the north, joined with Antiochus against the king of the south. The rebellion was ultimately crushed by the Egyptian general Scopas. When the forces of Antiochus withdrew over the winter of 201 and 200, Scopas regained some lost ground. The king of the north responded with another invasion. He won a decisive victory in northern Israel at the Battle of Panium and captured the city of Sidon, a fortified city where Scopas surrendered. Antiochus acquired complete control of the Holy Land, the Glorious Land. Verse 17. The Revised English Bible reads, "He," that is, the king of the north, "will resolve to advance with the full might of his kingdom, and, when he has agreed terms with the king of the south, he will give his young daughter in marriage to him, with a view to the destruction of the kingdom. But the treaty will not last, nor will it be his purpose which is served." Having defeated Scopas, Antiochus desired to gain control of Egypt itself. He gave his daughter Cleopatra, not the later more famous queen of that name, to Ptolemy V in marriage. He believed she would betray the interests of her husband in favor of him, her father. But Cleopatra frustrated the plans of Antiochus by siding with her husband. verses 18 and 19. Next, Antiochus attacked islands and coastal cities of southern Asia Minor and the Aegean area, at first areas that Egypt controlled, and then farther west in response to Greeks who appealed to him for help against increasing Roman control in the area. He also gave asylum to Rome's enemy, Hannibal of Carthage, who assisted him in landing in Greece. Rome responded by attacking Antiochus and inflicting defeat on his forces. The Romans deprived him of much of his territory and took several hostages to Rome, including Antiochus's son. Rome exacted heavy tribute of him. Antiochus returned in disgrace to his stronghold, Antioch. Unable to pay the heavy fees exacted by the Romans, he attempted to plunder a pagan temple in the eastern part of his kingdom. His action so enraged local inhabitants that they killed him, bringing him to an inglorious end. Verse 20, according to 2 Maccabees chapter 3, verses 7 through 40. Antiochus's other son, Seleucus IV, was also financially distressed by the tribute to Rome. 2 Maccabees is an apocryphal book that reports on these events. Seleucus sent one of his chief officials, Heliodorus, to collect taxes, even through plundering the temple at Jerusalem. Heliodorus went to the holy city but obtained nothing. Seleucus was later poisoned by Heliodorus and was thus killed, but not in anger or in battle. Antiochus, Epiphanes, verses 21 through 35. These verses speak of the infamous Antiochus IV. Antiochus, Epiphanes, the brother of Seleucus IV, who had earlier been taken hostage to Rome. He was, according to expositors, a tyrannical oppressor who did his utmost to destroy the Jewish religion altogether. Antiochus passed laws that forbade the practice of the Jewish religion under penalty of death. He was a man of incredible cruelty. According to Charles Pfeiffer in his book, Between the Testaments, an aged scribe, Eleazar, was flogged to death because he refused to eat swine's flesh. A mother and her seven children were successively butchered in the presence of the governor for refusing to pay homage to an image. Two mothers who had circumcised their newborn sons were driven through the city and cast headlong from the wall. Verse 31. This refers to the momentous events of December 16, 168 BC, when a crazed Antiochus entered Jerusalem and killed 80,000 men, women, and children. See 2 Maccabees, chapter 5, verses 11 through 14. He then desecrated the temple by offering a sacrifice of swine to the chief Greek god, Zeus. This outrage was a forerunner of a comparable event that Jesus Christ said would occur in the last days. See Matthew chapter 24, verse 15. Verses 32 through 35. These verses appear to describe, on one level, the indomitable will and courage of the Maccabees, a family of priests who resisted Antiochus and his successors. The Maccabees' revolt against the Syrian king was triggered when, according to expositors, Mattathias, the leading priest in the city of Modane, after killing the officer of Antiochus, who had come to enforce the new decree concerning idolatrous worship, led a guerrilla band that fled to the hills. Mattathias was aided in his cause by five sons, most notably Judah or Judas, nicknamed Maccabi, Aramaic for hammer, whence derives the name Maccabees. Many of these patriots died in this cause, but their heroics ultimately drove the Syrian forces from the country. On another level, these verses evidently refer to the New Testament church, with their references to mighty works, persecution, and apostasy continuing until the time of the end. Historic fulfillment switches to future fulfillment. With the explicit reference to the end time, Daniel's prophecy definitely takes on a different tone at this point. To quote expositors, with the conclusion of the preceding pericope, that is, extract, at verse 35, the predictive material that incontestably applies to the Hellenistic empires and the contest between the Seleucids and the Jewish patriots ends. This present section, verses 36 through 39, contains some features that hardly apply to Antiochus IV, though most of the details could apply to him as well as to his latter-day antitype, the beast. Liberal and conservative scholars agree that all of chapter 11 up to this point contains strikingly accurate predictions of the whole sweep of events from the reign of Cyrus to the unsuccessful effort of Antiochus Epiphanes to stamp out the Jewish faith. From this point forward, a little more than a century would pass before the Roman general Pompey would conquer Jerusalem. From then on, for many centuries, much of the Middle East passed to the control of the Roman Empire. The legacy of this North-South conflict is easily seen today. Tension between a traditionally Christian Europe and a deeply Islamic Middle East to the south is at its highest level since the Ottoman push of the 19th century. This age-old conflict will likely reignite as the time of the end nears. A revived Holy Roman Empire would seek greater influence in this most vital region, and regional Muslim powers would no doubt retaliate.
Thanks for listening to The King of the North versus The King of the South in the booklet, The Final Superpower. For the rest of the booklet, please visit ucg.org.